It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm David Asman.
I'm Janice Dean.
I'm Jimmy Failla. And this is the Fox News Rundown.
Thursday, April 25th, 2024. I'm Greg Palcott. After months of debate in Congress, Ukraine will get the foreign aid they say they desperately need. But will it be enough to turn the tide of war?
Be sure that everything goes on the battlefield, supporting not only Ukraine army, but defending democracy in the world.
We speak with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
I'm Dave Anthony. Another Trump case is at the Supreme Court today. The former president's claim he should be immune from prosecution for actions he took while in office. Jonathan Turley tells us it's a tricky one for the justices.
If they go too far one way, presidents are subject to almost endless charges. And if they go too far the other way, a president has virtually no accountability under the law.
And I'm Joe Concha. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
The vote came down late Tuesday night, the Senate lining up with the House approving a $95 billion foreign aid package. Nearly two-thirds of that money is intended to help Ukraine as they continue to battle Russia, who invaded the country over 2 years ago. President Biden signed it yesterday morning.
It's a good day for America, it's a good day for Europe, and it's a good day for world peace, for real.
Some Republicans opposed giving Ukraine more money, arguing U.S. taxpayers have already given enough. Senator Ted Cruz was among the 18 to vote against the bill.
It does nothing, zero, to stop the invasion at our southern border. That's got to be our priority.
How much the assistance will help Ukraine is yet to be known, but President Volodymyr Zelensky is grateful.
Before the interview, you said that it's a historic moment. Who knows? I think our children will know it in the future. But anyway, in this critical moment, I want to thank you for such significant support.
I spoke with the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, in Kyiv hours after the Senate's vote.
To President Biden, to Congress, to Mike Johnson, bipartisan support. Of course, bipartisan support. That is so important, crucial for our lives. Now we are in such moment of so many challenges, so many difficulties. We are not afraid of it when you don't afraid when you are not alone. Yes. And the moment when we waited for these 6 month decisions, 61 billion hopes, yes, of our people and not only of our people, you know it from all the Europe, all of them really support, understand that security in Ukraine, this is security for the world. I'm thankful to people of America. What I wanted to say, I'm thankful, not the first time. And I hope that you and the Americans will feel the result of their help, a result to save Ukraine and Ukrainians.
Let's talk about those 6 months. In that time, Russia has been pretty aggressive. They have been moving forward on various fronts. There's even been talk that they could have defeated you in this time. How close were you to being defeated? How important is it that these weapons from the U.S. get to you fast?
We will be very open with you and truthful. We must always be very open with people. Otherwise, nobody will believe us and nobody will help Ukraine. We have lost these 6 months. We have lost them, and you know, sometimes you can lose initiative, but here I think this time it transferred the initiative into the hand of the Russian military, and that's a fact. Right now the issue is to stabilize everything in certain directions. We have already managed to achieve it, but without the relevant package, thanks God, it was passed.
And God bless, we will get it as quick as possible. After you have to stabilize the situation, the front line. Now this is difficult, challenging period, difficult mission for us. That's why not only to get as quick as possible, also to get those things what we really need.
What can you expect? Perhaps this year, as you say, stabilizing the front line, stabilizing the defenses. When might you expect to be able to go back on the offensive? Perhaps next year?
I can tell you that, first of all, Russia prepares a counteroffensive. They want to occupy Donbas region. They're interested in the Kharkiv direction, and not just that. I want to speak frankly. For them, it is important not to lose. For that, they were not extremely successful, except that period of pause where they took the initiative and started pushing in the east of our country. They started pushing hard. They need victory. They need advantage. If they don't have that advantage, if we have air defense, we just mentioned it, and they will not be, thanks to the missiles, destroying civil population, and that's their task, to destroy the entire civil infrastructure, including energy. So if we have air defense, if we have long-range weapons, artillery, shelling, our crews that are not fully equipped because there was a lack and the delay in the supply. So if our brigades are fully supplied, these are four major points to stop Russia and to prevent their counteroffensive ambitions.
We were here for the second anniversary of the war. Now we're 2 years and maybe 3 months into this war. Has your definition of victory changed over this time? Would you be willing to leave Russia in a portion of your country with some kind of security guarantees? Or are you still saying we must go back to the 1991 borders?
Дивіться.
Look, going back to the borders of 1991 is not just a dream of Ukrainians, it is a reality of security for our state. This is the only way, by pushing Russian troops outside, we can guarantee fully on your independent territory stability and the presence of Ukraine. And I think this is the most important security guarantee. The borders of 1991. Next, sure, NATO, that's what Ukraine needs a lot. And there is also economic security when markets are open for you, equal conditions, equal relations and rights, which means membership in the EU. Sure, I'm talking about ambitions, plans of Ukraine, but I believe that if we talk about an actual safety, these three components must be present to achieve by military actions the return to the borders of 1991 in the situation that exists now. It may take a long time. We don't know the time frame, and there are lots of things involved, weapons, people, etc. So logically, to stop Russia, to carry out counteroffensive actions, but in parallel, use sanctions against Russia and diplomatic pressure. Diplomacy is a means to deal with these issues too. It is important.
I'm speaking about Europe, about geopolitical security, not only about EU, about Europe. So if we need real security, if we really want to have strong it for dozens of years for the security future of our region, we need to put him and to move him on his territory.
I'd like to shift back to America for two questions. In the House of Representatives, 112 Republicans voted against you, voted to not have the aid go to Ukraine. You've been praising President Biden, etc. What do you say to the 112 Republicans that this is the correct choice, that the money will be spent well, and that there will be transparency with all the purchases?
The part of Republicans being on our side, and I'm very thankful. Of course, we are very free, and Americans, and they can support Ukraine or not. Different people have different reasons, but mostly Americans on our side, and mostly Congress on our side, and it means the United States on our side. My message is to those congressmen who've been against. They have to know that this money go, first of all, to American defending sector. Their productions will get dozens of billions of money. Jobs, taxes, everything will be in United States. Also, they have to know that the part of this money always go to other European countries, not big number, but anyway, when United States gave some money to Ukrainian budget, for example, to our defending industry with Americans, we don't have secrets. All these technologies, we spend a lot of time, a lot of scientists and etc., our Ukrainian guys, very clever guys, and Americans also, and UK guys also. So all these technologies we share with our American friends. Sea drones, long distance drones, new generation systems of electronic warfare. All this we share with our partners, with the United States. So it's not just to give something, it's also to get a lot back. Be sure that everything goes on the battlefield, supporting not only Ukraine army, but defending democracy in the world.
President Biden has been heartfelt in his support for you. I know you watch American politics. There is the possibility that former President Trump could become president again next year. And he has had some words, maybe not against, but questioning some aspects of Ukraine. Would you be able to work with President Trump if he is elected and is president next year?
First of all, I think you said very important small detail, not to be against. So I hope that he will not be against Ukraine. Of course, there is different views on some details, but if we have common view and common values, we can work, of course. And anyway, you have to know that this is the decision of the United States people, and we will work with any president they will elect. Of course, we will work with the United States anyway, because it's our strategic partner and the leader in the world.
Whenever I come here, I make a point of going to a cemetery and paying my respects and talking with people who are paying their respects.
Thank you so much.
The casualties must be a huge weight, not just for you, but for all the people.
Yeah.
How does Ukraine go forward with your best and your brightest being lost? And how do you help to keep the morale of the country up during these very difficult times?
That is the most difficult question for me. It's you know, the question without real answer, because you can't find a real key to how to feel and how to control emotions and how to speak with the people who have losses in their families. No, there is no key. There is no anything good in the war, anything except peace. And even peace is not for everybody, because somebody lost sons, husbands, wives, and children. Children losses are the biggest tragedy for our families, of course, for the Ukraine. So how to go through this? Only understanding that if we will not stop Russia, they will kill all of us.
Kill all of you.
Yes. So, and that is only one answer. How to survive Ukraine? How to survive our people, our families? That is only one answer. Emotionally, it's so difficult. You can't close this gap in their soul, in their heart. You can't do it. With all the respect, giving them all support and heroic medals, you can't close this void in their heart. We need peace, but we need such peace with assurance that Putin will never come back. We have to do our job.
So you're doing your job right now?
I think, yes, I have to do.
For your family, too.
For my family, of course. I'm not only the president. I'm father.
At the end of the day, will Ukraine win? Are you still confident that that will happen? Will you achieve victory?
We have to. We don't have alternative. I don't know the kind of this victory. I don't know the concrete day. I don't know how it will be. I'm not sure that everybody will be happy. But this day, I'm not sure because of the losses, like I said to you. But I know that we don't have any alternative. That's why we have to win, and we will.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for
Thank
your time.
Thank you so much.
You can hear my full interview with President Zelensky this Saturday on the Fox News Rundown Extra podcast, available at foxnewsrundown.com or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Hey, folks, it's your man, Keyshawn Johnson, here to talk about Angie, formerly known as Angie's List, your go-to home services marketplace for getting all your jobs done well. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is Angie? Well, let me tell you, it's the nation's largest home services marketplace, connecting over 150 million homeowners with skilled professionals to tackle any project, big or small. As a homeowner myself, I always have things I want to work on for my house, whether it's general home renovations or fun projects like putting in a pool. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it a breeze to research, compare, and hire pros, ensuring every job is done well. Whether you're fixing a leaky faucet or planning a full kitchen renovation, Angie's got your back. And get this, folks. Angie's pros aren't just any old contractors. They're your neighbors, often running small businesses right in your community. Plus, they've been rated and reviewed by others in your area, so you know you're getting quality service. So why stress over home projects when you can turn to Angie? From finding the best price to scheduling a pro at your convenience, Angie's got you covered every step of the way. So get started today at Angie.com. That's Angie.com, or download the app today to get started on getting all your jobs done. That's Angie, your trusted ally in home services.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
This is Joe Concha with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Once again, the Supreme Court is ready to consider a Trump case. Weeks after rejecting state attempts to keep the former president off 2024 ballots because of the 2021 Capitol riot, justices will consider in today's hearing a Trump indictment related to January 6th.
An unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy.
That was Special Counsel Jack Smith announcing the criminal charges last August related to Trump attempts to block President Biden's election certification.
Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government.
The former president, who will be in court today in New York at his first criminal trial, calls all his legal cases political persecution aimed at undermining his campaign to be elected president again. And he's trying to get the federal case dismissed, claiming he should be immune from prosecution from acts taken while he was in office.
If you don't have immunity, you can be blackmailed. You can be, as a president, they'll say, if you don't do this, this, and this, we're going to indict you as soon as you leave office.
Will the Supreme Court, including three justices he appointed, agree?
It's monumental, not just in terms of constitutional law, but also potentially for the election.
Jonathan Turley is a law professor at George Washington University, a constitutional law expert, and a Fox News contributor.
It has been decades since the court last grappled seriously with this issue of presidential immunity. And the ghost of Richard Nixon still floats above all questions of immunity for presidents, whether civil or criminal. It was in 1982 that the court decided Nixon versus Fitzgerald. That was a close case. It was 5-4. But the court found that presidents cannot be sued in civil cases for their actions while in office.
All right. Now, that case dealt with someone who sued because he was fired after he testified before Congress while President Nixon was in office, I believe, in 1970, correct?
That's right. And Justice Lewis Powell wrote for the court, and he said that the majority believes that it was appropriate to recognize absolute presidential immunity from damages for acts that he described within the outer perimeter of his official responsibility. This is different. I mean, here you have an argument that immunity must also apply to some criminal charges. Now, below, that was a very sweeping assertion where the Trump team argued that it was absolute immunity on the criminal side. But the question really before the court is where to draw this line. The court may be as concerned with the sweeping aspect of the lower court's decision as they are with former President Trump's arguments. You know, this is an incrementalist court, and there may be an interest of the justices to find a more nuanced approach.
Okay. Now, as far as Nixon goes, there's another element that might be brought up at the hearing. That is dating back to Watergate. And in 1974, the Supreme Court ordered the president then to turn over incriminating White House recordings. And then the argument also is that he accepted a pardon after his resignation from then President Ford, which they say shows that he would have potentially been subject to criminal prosecution himself. Do you agree with that line?
Well, I think that the argument related to the pardon is a bit forced. There's lots of reasons why the pardon was offered. At that point, President Ford wanted to, quote, heal the nation. I don't know if you can read too much into that, but I think it's a fair question. The Supreme Court clearly wants a balancing. And so on one end, you have these extreme hypotheticals of the president ordering the death of a citizen and claiming immunity. On the other end, you have the former president saying, I have all of these district attorneys who happen to be Democrats in blue states who are just charging me willy-nilly and forcing me to stand for trial.
All right, let's parse that out a little bit, Professor. Let's get into this hypothetical. The president's attorney, former president's attorney, is saying things like, well, if the immunity is not put into place or upheld by the court, then other presidents will be dealing with all kinds of different potential criminal charges once they leave office. Like, for instance, what if there's a drone strike that a president ordered that ended up killing an American? Could he be criminally prosecuted for things like that? Do you think that's going too far?
Well, the drone strike is not a hypothetical, right? Because that's exactly what President Obama did. He ordered the death of a U.S. citizen and then later his son in drone attacks. The question is, could President Obama be charged with murder by some aggressive prosecutor? That's part of this cliff problem. There are cliffs on both sides for the Supreme Court. If they go far too far one way, presidents are subject to almost endless charges. And if they go too far the other way, a president has virtually no accountability under the law. And the question really we're going to see in this oral argument is there a third way? Is there a way to recognize that even in criminal law, there might be immunity? I mean, the strange thing about this argument is that the best lawyer arguing for former President Trump may be Alvin Bragg. I mean, the fact that the Bragg case is going on while this is being argued.
This is the district attorney in New York City in Manhattan, right? Yeah.
That's right. And he and the judge has said that the president, a former president, cannot attend the Supreme Court argument because he has to stay in the New York courtroom. But that New York prosecution, in the view of many of us, is blatantly political. You know, many of us cannot even see the underlying crime. There is still debate over what Bragg is specifically alleging in this indictment. That's not great timing for the Department of Justice, because if you really want to see the potential of no immunity, take a look at Manhattan.
Now, one of the arguments on the Trump side of this is that in order for a criminal prosecution, a president would have to be impeached and then convicted in the Senate. He, of course, was acquitted after his impeachment following the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot. After he left office, he was acquitted. Do you agree with their line on that?
I think that goes too far because impeachment is about the holding of an office.
And it's political.
Right. A criminal indictment is about the individual, about accountability of the individual under the criminal code. And so these arguments just push too far, particularly for an incrementalist court. But where they will find that balance is very hard to say. But there's a practical aspect to this.
Okay. Now, another argument is that, look, the former president, in his attempts to investigate what he claims, you know, was all sorts of election fraud, he was acting officially, trying to ensure U.S. election integrity. Now, the special counsel and the prosecution, they claim no, the things he was trying to do with the alternate set of electors and all that, those were private actions. So how do you parse that out?
I think that's actually the stronger argument for the Trump team, because here the line drawing disfavors the Justice Department. Obviously, if a president felt that there was election fraud, the president's expected to speak to the nation when the presidency, the future of the country, is at stake. Now, this president happened to be the party that lost the election. So one can understand why people say, well, that's not worrying about his office, that's worrying about himself. But what if he made the same statements if he was a second-term president? Would that be protected? So I think the justices are likely to ask that type of question.
Now, at the time, President Trump lost a lot of different court challenges. And so when it came to the Electoral College certification, none of his claims of fraud had been upheld in court, correct?
Right. In fact, I was doing the coverage that day, and I disagreed with the president, former president, while he was still speaking. I disagreed with his allegations of fraud. Also, his allegation that Vice President Pence could stop the certification. But that doesn't necessarily answer the question. Former President Trump is entitled to believe what he believed. He had attorneys telling him that, in fact, the certification could be stopped and that there is widespread evidence of fraud. I think the justices are going to be uncomfortable with defining the presidential privilege based on the state of mind of the president. I mean, they're going to want a bright line rule. That's what immunity is all about. It's designed to give assurance to presidents, a bright line that they just have to stay within and they can operate freely.
But you don't expect the court to give the former president what he wants, and that's immunity, and knock this case out, right?
Well, I'm not too sure what the court's going to do. I would not be surprised if it came up with a third option, and that could have a practical benefit for the former president. I doubt that it's going to embrace the sweeping arguments made by the Trump team, but it could have the same rejection of the sweeping arguments of the lower court. And if that's the case, I would think they would send this back with a new standard, a nuanced test. That alone would benefit the former president, because I can't see how a remand like that could be satisfied and still have a trial before the election. And if this trial is after the election, and if Trump is reelected, Jack Smith may never see a jury in either of these cases.
Well, it's fascinating what's going on for sure. Jonathan Turley, George Washington University law professor, constitutional law expert. Great to talk to you once again. Thank you so much.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Benjamin Hall, Fox News correspondent and New York Times bestselling author. Join me for my brand new podcast, Searching for Heroes. Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review.
Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Joe Concha.
What's on your mind?
The trend that began months ago continues, and it doesn't seem to matter where the poll comes from, the final answer is always the same. It's Donald Trump leading or tied with Joe Biden in seven swing states, this time from a Bloomberg News survey. The former president enjoying comfortable margins in North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada. He's leading in Wisconsin, leading in Pennsylvania, within the margin of error in Michigan. And remember, there were no national polls showing Trump leading in 2016 or 2020. It bears repeating once again. unless inflation does a 180 and voters actually feel a real drop in food prices and energy costs and rents, and unless these protests suddenly decide to go away during the summer that we're seeing on college campuses across the country, which they won't, and unless the border is suddenly no longer a major issue for voters, it's hard to see how Trump isn't sitting in the Oval Office again on the 20th of January, 2025. We're still 190-something days until Election Day, but if this election were held today, Donald Trump is your next president. I'm Joe Concha.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. The Will Kane Show is now dropping 5 episodes a week. Join Fox and Friends weekend host Will Kane as he tackles the latest headlines from his unique perspective, along with thought-provoking interviews with leading figures and live calls from viewers and listeners. Listen wherever you download your favorite podcasts.